please take the roll.
Mayor Scholl.
I'm here.
Vice Mayor George.
Here.
Alderman Adler.
Here.
Alderman Cooper.
Here.
Alderman Duncan.
Here.
Alderman Ultraman.
Here.
Alderman Phillips.
Here.
By my count, all seven are present, one is present electronically. And that's okay for the governor's directive. And let me read the statement that we normally have during this COVID pandemic time. A determination by the board that meeting electronically and prohibiting the physical presence of the public at the meeting is necessary to protect public health, safety, and welfare of all concerned in light of the COVID-19 virus. At this time, I'll ask my colleagues on the board to concur with this statement so we can proceed accordingly. I'll start with Ms. Betsy.
I affirm.
Thank you. Daryl?
I affirm.
James?
I affirm.
Tommy?
I affirm.
Jennifer?
I affirm.
Thank you. And Vice Mayor?
I affirm.
Thank you. I also affirm. That means we can proceed in the accordance with the directive provided by the governor on how to do these meetings during the pandemic. Mr. City Manager, you're up.
All right, I'd like to introduce to you all a relatively new employee with the Kingsport Chamber of Commerce. Let me see, Jeff Fleming is going to talk to us about a program that he's been involved with called Move to Kingsport. So, Jeff, welcome back.
Thank you.
What's he doing?
What's that, Tommy?
What's he doing then?
I'm here for topical relief.
Oh,
Jeffrey.
Hey, so how's everybody?
Right.
I am actually smiling behind this mask. So,
you're wearing long pants.
It makes I did. It's really weird. So, y'all want to be formal. So, I told Chris the other day that it was nice to be able to find something I could do that kept me involved without in his hair. And hopefully this is it.
I saw you lifeguarding down on the beach.
Oh, that's right. Got back yesterday. So.
Yeah.
So, what I want to do is, I've got 8 slides, because I know y'all seen this presentation like ad infinitum, and you don't want to see it again, but just to quickly remind you that this is the official city relocation program. It is public, private, non-profit partnership. We do have private sponsors that pay us a substantial part of that. The non-profit, of course, is the Chamber and the Tourism Bureau, and then public, of course, is the city. We appreciate your support. It is a tourism economic development initiative that began back at the 1999 Economic Summit, was when the idea was formed. The actual program started in 2006, so we've been doing it for 14 years. I told somebody the other day we're getting a lot of airplay about the Move to Kingsport program, but it reminded me of when we went to see the mayor of Greenville, South Carolina, and he said, we're the 30-year overnight success story. He said, we've been working on this for 30 years, but nobody really took note until lately. So, although I'm new to the program in this regard, it is certainly not a new program, something we've been working on for a very long time. The whole idea was to take our community assets that we already had in place, to leverage them to attract folks to move here that were interested in those assets, so that we didn't have to invest in any new thing to recruit somebody, just bundle up and use the assets we had to get folks to move here. We wanted to grow and diversify the economy and enhance the quality of life. Part of our role is to support realtors and employers who are selling the community as a highly desirable place to work. I always say I'm not a realtor. Don't pretend to be a realtor. All we do is try to support realtors and help them do their job. With employers, we've been very active with Ballad. They have called us much, much more frequently recently. And so we've been able to meet one-on-one with prospective employees that they are bringing in.
Yes. Jeff, may I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
When you brief me one-on-one, you've stressed that you try to help the realtors in general.
Yes.
You don't favor any one realtor or any one firm.
Right.
And I just want to make everybody know that that's the case.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Pretty much what we do is just we're a resource in terms of we have material that can be shared. We have digital advertising that we direct the folks to realtor.com. And so if a realtor or a company has a listing on realtor.com, which is kind of a universal thing, then they will benefit from our work. I mean, that's the idea. So And we're an official retired Tennessee community, but that is not strictly the focus of what we're going for. I know a lot of folks think we only are recruiting retirees. That's not the case. But there are 22 counties in Tennessee that go through a process to be selected as a retired Tennessee community. So we do get quite a bit of leads from the state. But here lately, during the pandemic, the state has stopped advertising completely. And our website statistics have really gone off the charts. So that tells me that we're doing a lot locally. Not that we don't need the state, but we're generating our own leads now, which is a very strong sign for us. So we highlight the value proposition of living here. So just as an example, this is one of the things that we do, particularly when we're recruiting an employee. We had an employee who was considering a medical position somewhere else in the region, either here or elsewhere. So we decided to just kind of back into the numbers and said, well, if you want to go to Asheville, you know, for $100,000 in Kingsport, it's going to cost $130,000 in Asheville. For $100,000 in Kingsport, it's going to be $109,000 in Lexington, Kentucky. For $100,000 in Kingsport, it would be $107,000 in Knoxville. $100,000 in Roanoke, it's about the same on your daily expenses, but you have to add in some other things in Virginia, which I'll talk about here in just a minute. And then Greenville, South Carolina is $109,000. So again, the value proposition of living here is just exceptional. We are a very affordable place to live, period. If you add the income tax, Tennessee is zero. You see North Carolina is 5.25, South Carolina is 7, Kentucky is 5, Virginia is 5.75. So although the daily cost of living between Roanoke and here is equal, you have to add in the income tax. So it really is not equal anymore. For every $100,000 you make, this is what you would keep after federal, state, and income taxes, filing as a single. In Tennessee, you would keep $77,000, North Carolina $72,000, South Carolina $71,000, Kentucky $69,000, and Virginia $71,000. So again, just part of living in Tennessee, it's a tremendous value proposition to be considered. You add in the average annual tax per vehicle. Virginia has one of the highest in the nation at $962. Kentucky $286, South Carolina $416, North Carolina $294. Tennessee zero. So we bundle all these things up and we constantly put them out there for folks to look at, and they start, you know, adding it up saying, wow, why doesn't my state do this? So Kingsport, Tennessee at a glance. This is a very powerful selling point. No income tax, excellent schools, internationally accredited police and fire. Why do I say that? Because if you want to live in a cheap place, there's plenty of cheap places to live. But if you want to live in a really, really affordable place like Kingsport and have exceptional services, I would put us up against anybody in that regard. Property tax is about 1% of your home appraisal. That includes county. No layers of special taxes like schools and fire. When we went to Spartanburg, South Carolina a few years ago, they told us that there were 43 separate taxing jurisdictions in South Carolina and Spartanburg. And how many of those you are under determines how much your out-of-pocket expense is. So they really couldn't, they could tell you a property tax rate, but they couldn't tell you your out-of-pocket because they had to know if the schools are going to charge you, the fire district's going to charge you, parks district's going to charge you, so forth. So when you're looking at property tax comparisons, you have to remember everybody doesn't put everything in their property tax like we do. And everybody doesn't report it in hundreds like we do. Most report it in thousands. So if we were pretty much in any other state, if our tax rate's $1.97, I don't know what it is now, let's say it's $1.97, it would be 0.197 if you were in South Carolina. So it looks like we have a really high rate, but we don't. We have no death taxes on inheritance in estates. That's huge. We have no wheel tax in Kingsport or Sullivan County, no annual tax on vehicles, boats, and RVs, no vehicle inspection fees. We have no annual vehicle taxes of any kind. Monthly garbage collection is $8. Free removal of yard waste, limbs, leaves, junk, mattresses, box springs. Tables, carpet, appliances, up to 4 tires off the rim, and a spring clean where almost anything goes except hazardous waste. Again, there's hardly any place that offers that. And then finally, water, sewer, and sanitation is about $59 per month on average. So again, the value proposition is just amazing. And, you know, and when I talk to other groups, I remind them that you all are the board that sets the all-inclusive cost of living for Kingsport. Because the school board doesn't have taxing jurisdiction, the parks district doesn't have taxing, you decide. So every year you decide property taxes will be this much, water rate will be this much, sewer rate will be that much, and that determines how much it costs to live in here. So it's really important, the work that you do, because you set the tone for everybody else. We do target social media ads. We learned that with Facebook particularly, it's extremely affordable to advertise, and you can drill down and target your audience. So if we're trying to reach, like Illinois just did not pass their fair tax proposition, so they're going to go through a major service cut. So that's a hot topic right now. So what we'll do is we'll take an article from Illinois, we'll pay $40 on Facebook, and we'll target every person living in Illinois. So that'll reach probably 10,000 people through that kind of ad. It only costs us $40. So, and then we've spent under $500.
How's that in a magazine?
It's like when you are on Facebook and you're scrolling down and you see sponsored ad.
Yeah.
And you go, why did that pop up in my news feed?
Oh, okay.
Somebody like me has gone in there and said, you know, you like sports, you know, you like football, you like investing, and then something that matches those will make it cost, it'll show up in your feed.
That's good.
And once you scroll through it, then it's an impression because you saw it. But if you click on it, then you get even more credit because you've followed a link that you might actually end up buying something. So we've reached 92,722 people in the last 90 days, and that drives traffic to our website. You can see the chart down here. We were back in March, we were at about 600 hits a month. Now we're up to 2,200 a month. So and what happens there is they click, they request a relocation guide. It goes to the Chamber of Commerce. They fulfill it through a packet that they mail. Or more and more people are opting for the online version, which is our preferred method, because it doesn't cost us anything to mail it. They can just access it online. To give you a comparison of what folks that aren't from here are experiencing, Flushing, New York, this is 1,095 square feet. That's probably about as big as one of the houses over in Greenfields. It costs $1.095 million, has three bedrooms, two baths, estimated payment $4,800 a month. Kingsport, that's a house out in Huntington Hills, $669,000, 5,676 square feet, six bedrooms and seven baths. And of course, the tax comparison is not even close. So we just basically take what we know and we show people outside. And then in this particular case, we reached 12,749 people in the metropolitan New York area. So since the pandemic, I told Chris the other day that the real reason I started tracking the pandemic as a definite date was I was afraid to be like the state, where we just would stop advertising and everybody would just stop moving, but that really has not been the case at all. In the past few months since March, we've had 431 families from 39 states plus Puerto Rico. And the total value is about $51 million in real estate that has taken. And this is just from people moving from greater than 35 miles away. It doesn't count all transactions. Median price, $239. Median size, three bedrooms, three baths, 2,176 square feet. Median year built is 1986. So it's not all, you know, new construction by any stretch. It's existing construction as well. I like this slide because it has... You look over here, you see Hawaii, and you know, we had a guy that was watching the Golf Channel, the world's longest drive from Meadowview, and he called up and bought a house sight unseen here, and is moving from Lahaina, Maui, to here. So I thought that was a fun story. So the top states requesting information, so you kind of have two sides of the house. You have people that are looking for information, and you have people that are actually moving here. So in this case, we had a show right before COVID hit in the metropolitan D.C. area, so that's why you see Virginia, Maryland at the top there. So that's not always going to be the case, but it is this time. So if you say there's 653 from Virginia looking, and you had 44 that actually moved here. Again, that's more than 35 miles away. That doesn't count Weber City and Gate City and places like that. This is further up into Virginia. New York, we had 278 request information. I mean, actually be motivated enough to ask for information. But we had 11 that moved here. California, 127 requested information. 18 actually moved here. So the reason I share this with you is, you know, a lot of times we talk in tens of thousands of impressions and advertisements, but really, to make a meaningful difference, you only need 11 or 12 or 15, you know, that move here from different states over a short period of time. So it's not like you have to have hundreds and hundreds. And kind of going back to my conversations with Mike Billingsley over the years, you know, I love Middle Tennessee and all, but I really wouldn't want us to be, you know, in the position where I just found out that Rutherford County has like 8 6A high schools now. You know, they can't even fit them all in one conference. They have to put two over in the Davidson County District to have enough to have a conference. To me, that's too fast. That's straining your infrastructure. It's really beginning to erode your quality of life. And I feel like there's a sweet spot, and I hope that's where we are right now. Top metros, and I shared this with you back in February, so I'm not going to belabor it. But, you know, we always hear about Asheville. We hear about Charleston. And why in the world would anybody move here from those places? But it turns out that Asheville is the 6th on our list, and Charleston is 21st. And that list, if I was to expand it on out, it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cities. So this gives you an idea. Now, this is over the whole 14 years. But, again, it's an impressive list, and it's a very diverse list when you look at it. It's not just like one place. And I don't include the Tennessee metros. If I did, there would be 3 or 4 up there in the top 10 from Tennessee. So drilling down even more, and I do this just to impress that these are real people, and they're living in real houses in Kingsport. So without, you know, telling their personal information, this is listed in order from high to low. But like someone in Coventry Wine paid $1.27 million. They're from Chapel Hill, Texas. You can go on down the list. Rose Garden, $509,000 from Bryan, Texas. Golf Ridge from Mundelein, Illinois, which is metropolitan Chicago. So when you look at that, to me, it was really impressive because you start to put, as much as you can, a face with a place. And I think that drives home the point that they are living here. So what is the future? This is my last slide. Gosh, we need inventory, 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 inventory. I know that you know, y'all could sell as many houses as we could probably put on the market, seems like. But last time I talked to you, I showed a slide that said a certain price range, then every one of them was contingent. And, you know, it's still pretty much that way if you go to realtor.com and you're looking for a house, and then you say hi to the ones that are pending or contingent, you know, a lot of the math gets wiped out. So, again, that's one of the things that we need is more inventory to work with. Now, a lot of the people that I'm talking to that are you know, they're from far away, and they live in a really urban environment, and they think that we live on 5-acre tracts with, you know, that's not really the case in the city of Kingsport, but that is something that they, in their mind's eye, they're thinking we're really, really rural. But the price point they're looking at is somewhere in the 250 to 350 range is kind of a normal number. The pandemic changed everything. We've got more traffic than I ever dreamed that we would have. I'm getting more and more referrals of people who want to share their story. One of the ones is a fellow that lives in Town Park Lofts. He joined the Pickleball League, and he was talking to Alan Wilder, and Alan Wilder referred to, go tell, call Jeff, tell him the story. And he said, well, I was driving from Brooklyn to Austin, Texas to visit some family. Lived out there for a little while because I had to get out of the city during the pandemic. Everything was locked down. Didn't really like Texas, so I started back home. And this is about the halfway point between Austin and New York. And he said I had a friend or a relative that lived in Gate City or moved to Gate City. So I stopped to see him, and I started, well, I'll just drive around downtown Kingsport. And he saw Town Park Lofts. And so he just checked the apartment rent. And he said, my gosh, the rent was the same as I was paying for a parking space in New York. And so he said, I thought, well, I'm just going to stay here a while. And so he said, the longer I stay here, the more I think I'm just going to buy here. And then I'll tell my children back home, why are you still in New York? You can work from home now. You don't need to be in a large urban environment like that. Shave off a lot of your expenses, pocket the difference, and, you know, retire early or something, you know. And you know, these folks, in this case, is He's like a director of strategic relationships for a high-speed internet company or something to that effect. You looked them up on LinkedIn, I know. And so that's exactly the kind of people that you want moving here. They've got resources, they've got income to spend, and that's really what we're trying to work with. Small cities are poised for success. This is not just Kingsport, this is everywhere. But high-speed internet is mandatory. Schools, police, and safety, affordable and amenitized. I spend a lot of time fielding questions about moving to East Tennessee in general. And somebody will say, hey, I'm thinking about moving to Run Mountain. What do you think? And I'm like, well, how often do you go to the grocery store? You know, do you want internet? I mean, you know, why don't you live in Kingsport and visit Run Mountain, you know? And so they just don't think through all the daily things that they've become accustomed to. So what I try to do is use my experience as city manager to help them think about some things. Like somebody drills down and finds a rural place where they find something in Kingsport, and they're older, and they have medical issues or something. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not being facetious, but if you call 911, how quickly do you want to get there? You know, and where is the medical facility? And I said, we have 24/7, 365 paramedics within 5 minutes of your house anywhere in Kingsport. How valuable is that to you? Do you want to live, you know, where you call and it may be 15 minutes or whatever? I mean, how much is a minute worth to you? And the look on their face is like, oh gosh, I hadn't even thought about that, you know. So that's what we're trying to do. And Don Finley did a little article last week that one in three Tri-Cities home sales are all cash, you know, which is good for the market because it moves quickly. It's kind of hard for buyers because unless you're prepared to buy with cash, you know, you get outmaneuvered by somebody that does have cash. And so again, kind of trying to find that sweet spot where you don't price locals out of the market, but you create enough demand that folks really want to be in this area. And so that's what we're trying to do. Hopefully we've made a difference, and be happy to answer any questions you may have. But again, thanks for the opportunity to do this. I dearly love it. It gives me a chance to continue selling Kingsport in a productive way. And again, I just appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Jeff. Let me start around the table here with my colleagues. Betsy, is anything you want to?
No, I appreciate what you're doing.
Okay. Daryl?
Well, just a couple of things. You mentioned high-speed internet. And have you had anybody that's really thought they needed more speed, more?
I haven't.
I mean, we hear that, yeah. You know, and so how? I haven't either. I mean, yeah. I haven't heard anybody else.
Say. So the main thing they're looking for is enough speed to stream all their devices, you know, at the same time. Usually they don't need, you know, the really, really super high speeds, like for business purposes. It's more personal, and that's more what I interact with. So if there are business conversations, I haven't been privy to those.
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard that either, really, on the residential side. Really. You know, you mentioned, a higher traffic, and so I think in the chamber meeting last week, from October 19 to October of 2020, I mean, it had almost doubled the number of hits. And yeah. So when I first seen that, you know, monthly, you know, we get that information, it's almost hard to believe it during COVID. But then on the other, you know, people's fed up with some of these other places that are wanting out. But, you know, to get almost twice as many hits as we did from last year is pretty incredible, really. It's hard to believe. But it's really
some of the stories were, we had a lady from New Jersey call me, and she said that they had been locked down for so long, she was afraid she was going to lose her livelihood because her business had been shut down for so long. And so she had bought a business in Kingsport and was in the process of moving here. And she wanted to know what she could expect when she got here in terms of how, you know, are you shut down? Are you operating? I said, look, we're living life on a daily basis, you know, wearing your mask, socially distanced. But, you know, everything's pretty much open. And she said, okay. So restaurants? Yeah, restaurants are open. And she has school children, so I said, if I can help you introduce to your principals or whatever, I'm happy to do that. And she said, well, what's traffic like? And I said, well, it's nothing like New Jersey. And I said, well, we did have a cardinal rule. And she said, what's that? And I said, if the little old lady or the little old man like me you know, dozes off before the light turns, when the green light arrow turns on, you don't turn fast enough. Just sit through the cycle. Don't lay on the horn and blow. We don't do that. And she's like, really? I said, that's a cardinal rule. You do not blow at anybody. She's like, okay. I won't blow at them. And then she said, you know, I was talking to my girlfriend back in New Jersey, and she said, I was telling her I was talking to this guy in Tennessee that like welcomes you to Tennessee. And she said, there's a guy that welcomes you to Tennessee? I said, well, it's just Kingsport, but I'll take it. So.
Is that it, Daryl?
Yeah.
And Daryl, thank you for chairing the Move to Kingsport Committee at the Chamber.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, it's a lot of interaction that, but it's Jeff stepped up a notch. I mean, he's really taking it to a different level and gave it more direction. I mean, so we appreciate you doing that, Jeff.
James?
Well, I'm glad that you're holding this position until we can find somebody who cares about Kingsport to do it. So I must take some of Betsy's questions since she didn't ask any, because this is so important to what we're doing in terms of houses and how home building and things like that. So my first question is, what can we as a board do to help you to get people to pick Kingsport? What do you need besides, if you dig down deeper into this, obviously you need houses.
Right. That's the main thing. One of the questions I get a lot is, is jobs. They need a job when they get here, so that's obviously one thing. Not everybody's bringing their job with them, obviously. A lot of them are shocked at the difference in pay between where they're coming from and here. But, I tell them it's a two-sided equation, so you have to you have to do both sides of the equation. You're not going to bring a New York income to Tennessee and expect to get the same income. It'll much lower cost of living, so there's not much you can do about that.
Right.
I don't think there's a whole lot that you as a board can really influence, other than you've already streamlined the regulations. That was huge. You've made it palatable for developers to be here. Now we've got to find the people. We've got the local developers who we love and want to support, but in some cases, you may have to go out and try to find others and tell them about the opportunity of being here. I had a guy in Hilton Head probably 5 years ago that approached me and said, I hope you're ready. And I said, for what? And he said, because with all these changes in the federal tax law, where they're making these state and local taxes in high-cost states not deductible anymore, people are going to realize that they're going to start getting out of those states. New Jersey has implemented an exit tax. So now people they're selling their house in New Jersey, moving into an apartment for a year, then moving so they can avoid the exit tax. California is looking at that as well. So he said, you're going to boom. Well, we haven't exactly boomed. And I think one of the reasons why we haven't exactly boomed is we don't have the inventory. We don't have the inventory because we don't have the developers that can, start a large subdivision. You got to have access to capital, investors, and all that kind of stuff. And talking to Wilmington, North Carolina a few years ago, very similar to us at that time, they went and recruited a custom home builder from Greenville, North Carolina, that moved to Wilmington, and they opened up like 3 or 4 field offices in the greater Wilmington area now. So they're doing like one subdivision will have 500 lots. Edinburgh, I think, has 300. So imagine if you had a stretch down a street like 11W, that's what it looked like in Wilmington, and on both sides you just had 500. And so we started asking them how they did that, and she said that they had a builder's rep or something that gets a cut of the commission. So what they do is they have someone out recruiting people, and once they land somebody, they hand them off to a design consultant. And they used to have like 5 selections and floor coverings and cabinetry and all this stuff. And she said, now we have hundreds. But we know enough about it to be able to keep the price from creeping up. So we can definitively tell someone, you can swap out this color for that color and do this and that, and this will be your price. She said, we weren't that savvy before. And so a lot of times you'll get smaller builders that want to be people pleasers, and they end up putting themselves out of business because they promised the world and it goes into their profit.
Yeah.
So if you could find somebody like that to move here or to build here, that would be wonderful. Maybe there's somebody in the Knoxville area or Virginia or North Carolina. I don't know.
Okay. Do you happen to have the numbers on people moving from within 35 miles, the Johnson Cities and Bristols? I'd be curious to know how many people are deciding they want to come here for various reasons.
Yes, I'd be happy to. I'll get that to you.
That would be interesting to know. And then I have two other questions, but one's short. Do you have any idea, I mean, in our studies that we've been doing, we've been trying to pinpoint where these people are coming from. And I don't mean pinpoint like from Chapel Hill, Texas. Yeah. I mean trying to understand how we built 700 apartments in 2 years and they're all full, and how when a house goes on sale on Friday, it sells on Saturday. Now, those people all aren't coming from Texas and from California. Yeah. So where are those people coming from?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the national trends that we're seeing is that after 2008, they changed the lending laws because of the crash. And so, you know, if you're graduating from college and you have student loan debt and you have to have a down payment saved up in advance, and you also have a debt payment that just kicked in because you graduated, it makes it a little more difficult for you to buy a house out the gate. So therefore, apartments are becoming much more desirable for that purpose alone. Now, as far as single family houses, I can't tell you exactly why. We've talked about trying to, you know, we get their phone numbers, and we thought about calling them up, and we thought that was a little creepy. So we decided that we wouldn't go that far, but I'd like to know myself. So.
It's almost like it's just enjoy the ride, because you're never going to know the true answer.
Right.
Last question. You mentioned something about Ballad. Can you go into detail a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so they have a human resources recruiter based here in Kingsport. And any of the recruits that they have coming here for any of the Kingsport facilities, I mean, within reason, they don't do everybody, but they'll bring them to us, and it may be someone that they're really trying to impress. And so, you know, we were talking to a cardiovascular surgeon the other day, and that was from the metro Dallas-Fort Worth area. And, you know, they've got a child that is ranked number one in the class and is athletic and, you know, wants to know if he's going to be happy in Kingsport. So, you know, we'll bring in, you know, Kingsport City Schools and any resources that we need to try to answer those questions and demonstrate to them that although when you look at general census metrics, you know, our income levels aren't comparable to Metro Dallas, our poverty level looks high because you have a national poverty level. So if you're an affordable place, you're naturally going to look more impoverished, and that's a little difficult for folks like you know, to understand. It's more the relativity thing. Mm-hmm. And we just try to help reframe the story so that they're not just looking at it, you know, blindly. And they keep calling us back, and they keep bringing us more, so I guess we're doing okay with it.
That's good.
We probably had, I don't know, probably 15 since March, something like that.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, I'm out.
Okay, Tommy?
Well, first of all, Jeff, I'd like to thank you for being involved in this. It's always good to have a homegrown person who's lived here all of his life, who could really explain to the visitor some of the things that they may overlook and things like that. I think you bring a real asset to the program. And I would go on, but I sit over here for an hour trying to think of a good, smart question. And James says it's the first question you have. So anyway, I really appreciate you taking the time, and it's going to pay dividends for our city. And thanks for doing it.
Well, thank you.
Jennifer Adler?
Yeah. You need to give us a best primer because you grew up here knowing what Fun Fest is.
think the question is, how do we continue to think about, on the follow-up side of things, about how do we engage those who are coming into the city, into the life of the city, and continue the sort of welcoming sense that, you know, you were the face of the Paintsville for many of them. But ideas or thoughts on how we can do that?
So that's a great point and a great question. I had someone reach out to me the other day about the lodge in Watch City. And so the lodge, you know, was a place where it was kind of like our town park office. You know, back then it was an apartment complex in the middle of town. And then they would move out of the apartments into a neighboring house. There were social interactions. There were clubs. There were ways to meet people. A lot of folks met and married, you know, in that environment. That part is not my strong suit. I have pointed it out to Chelsea and Laura and asked them to, or Lara, and asked them to think about that. But we haven't really cracked the code on that. But that is really important. You know, we were going to do a farmer's market reception before the pandemic hit, and that was going to be our first kind of toe in the water for that, but we weren't able to do it. So hopefully we can go back to that and meet some of these folks in an event. But I am worried that folks move here and they don't know anybody, and they don't know how to meet anybody, and then they get frustrated in a few years because they have many friends, and they, you know, they leave. So I'm open to ideas or suggestions on that, but it's very important. So
let's keep thinking, Jeff, about that. I mean, even things like, you know, a book for new Kingsport residents could be helpful, right?
Yeah.
I know you mentioned that you do that for Valley, but you all also do it for a lot of other companies.
Anybody that asks, we do it.
Anybody that asks, and I know you don't, and they will do it for realtors, not just their unofficial favorite realtors that are terrible at this.
We've done it for the city.
Yeah.
We've done it for Regional Eye Center, their new CEO. We talked to them, and we've done it for Eastman, and we talked to Paula. It took over CG's position at Eastman. We interact with her. So, yeah, I mean, it just ask, and we're happy to help. Fallon just asks a lot. So,
well, they're hopefully bringing it on.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, when like what Jennifer I was talking about, I know that before all this happened, I think the last year FunFest had a newcomers tent.
Yes.
So everybody could come up and meet, and they had some kind of information to give. And you know, I guess I see this every day with people moving in and out, as Daryl. I mean, our world is talking to these people and why they're coming and why people have to leave.
Yeah.
And we are blessed right now with having so many people trying to get here and not having, you know, the issue is not having what they're looking for.
Right.
And as you stated earlier, a lot of people looking to move here think they want acreage.
Yeah.
They all want, you know, 1 to 5 acres. And in Kingsport, we don't have that, and I know we're obviously very short inventory. I mean, right now, you know, if you're listing a ranch on a large yard between 175 and 250, you'll have 5 offers before the end of the day. But we need all types of houses, but we really need some things with larger yards, and that's where we're going to have to find land. Because that's our real shortcoming. Like when you're talking about other cities that can open up large subdivisions, I mean, we don't have any land.
Yeah, right.
So that's our main thing is if we can get the builders, what are they going to build? Because,
right.
You know, we've got people trying to go in for pockets,
yeah.
But and they're having to go very small yards.
Yeah.
But we have a large market for people that would like something with a little bit larger yard and more rolling, and that's what we're getting so many calls on, is because with the pandemic, people want a little bit of space because they've been locked in. And you're doing a great job. My only thing is I think we need to do apply to move to Kingsport.
Yeah, exactly.
And have a criteria, because we don't really just want everybody.
Yeah.
So that would be my only thing. And then,
wow.
You'd be amazed. Although you wouldn't be. You experience it every day, but I was amazed at how frank people are about what they are and aren't looking for, and nothing's really off the table. And I'm like, that's really not appropriate to talk about. You know, so
we hear everything.
Yeah, yeah. So
well, that's it.
Okay. Okay. Jeff, you've been doing this now for several months, mm-hmm. but since you started, what's been your biggest surprise about this process?
I guess the biggest surprise has been just the volume that's happened after the pandemic. And, you know, just experimenting with the digital ads, not knowing what kind of, you know, we could just plod along and have, a couple hundred a month, but having 2,200 it reinforces the concept that there's a lot of people out in this country, and you only need an infinitesimal piece of an infinitesimal piece to make an economic difference in your community. And so you don't have to have 10,000 people moving here, but you need enough to stay economically sustainable. And that was a big reinforcement for me to see that. And I've really enjoyed, listening to the stories of people that appreciate what we have every single day and take for granted. I mean, every single day and take for granted, I've told y'all the story about when my son moved to Fair Acres and he won't come to our house because it's in Bristol, It's just too far away. I said, if you lived anywhere else, how would you survive? Because you can get anywhere you need and have access to any service you need within 10 blocks, I mean, that's just not readily available anywhere else.
Well, coming back to Kingsport, I've probably told you all this 17 times, but coming back to Kingsport was my 17th move, and boy, this is just a great place to live.
I guess, James, one final thing. You said, what can y'all do? I do get people from Kingsport that reach out to me and say, I wish you'd stop bringing all these people from outside because I can't buy a house because outsiders are buying faster than I can. and then they'll follow up and say, I want new construction at $150,000 in the middle of town, in a certain school district. And I'm like, that's not reality, anymore. But having access to new construction that is an affordable price point is on a lot of people's minds. And they would like to have that in Kingsport. If they can't find it here, they'll go to elsewhere in the region to find it, So.
Well, thank you a lot, Jeff, and keep up the good work.
That was a good tie-in for Joel there, wasn't it?
Standing ovation. All right, so Jeff, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Joel got here a little early, so we're going to go ahead and move into that. And Joel, come up here and we'll...
I always hate to follow Jeff in anything. That's a hard act to follow, that's for sure. I do have hard copies of this, so. Okay.
Jessica, would you want to
eat?
I didn't notice we had one in my room up there, so I need to do it too.
You're fine. You can take it off.
Okay. I don't mind either way. I was just a little harder to hear with it on. But we ready? Well, I'll go ahead and just say thank you for inviting me to come. As you know, I've been working on TIFs as counsel for the Kingsport Housing Authority, well, for almost 20 years now. It seems like a long, long journey, but just sort of as a refresher for everyone, I think there's probably been maybe five previous TIF projects in the city of Kingsport, and this is not in the presentation, this is extra free stuff. Eastone Commons was the first TIF, and that project, the TIF debt was paid off, I think, after about 9 years and well ahead of the 15-year schedule, just because the assessments came in higher than what were estimated, so the TIF revenue was greater, so the loan was prepaid basically over time. There's Crown Point, which is also paid off ahead of schedule. That was the redevelopment of the old Food City into the new Food City and Crown Point Shopping Center. I think that paid off in maybe 12 years. instead of 15, and these, that's approximate, maybe it was 13, but, and then we have three other active projects, and that's the Indian Trail apartments, the Riverbend apartments, and the Blake. And what those are all.
Joel, what about the pavilion? I thought, wasn't that a TIF?
That was not a TIF. That was a direct arrangement between the Industrial Development Board and the developer.
But I remember now.
Yeah, there was an incentive there, but it was not a TIF.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, and each of the current TIFs are doing well. They're amortizing. The revenue was basically what we projected, and so they're performing as expected. Okay, so having said that, we'll backtrack and talk about what is a TIF. So in this context, what I've mainly dealt with in the city of Kingsport are housing authority TIFs. So we're going to talk about that first, and then we'll talk about also a little bit about Industrial Development Board TIFs. So in the housing authority context, a TIF is just a development tool and incentive, if you will, that basically uses the future tax revenue growth to pay or amortize a loan that's then used to reimburse the developer for certain development expenses. And obviously that has to occur within the redevelopment district. So where can it be used? So in a housing authority TIF, sort of the big factor there is it has to be in a redevelopment district. And in order to have a redevelopment district, it has to be for purposes of removing, preventing, or reducing blight. Blighting factors are the causes of blight. And I didn't write that. That's straight out of the statute, and I know that's a little confusing. So that raises the obvious question. So what does blight mean? That's a kind of a harsh word, but when you actually read the definition in the statute, you know, it's pretty broad, and I'm not going to read this whole thing to you, but, you know, what it doesn't include are things like vacant land, things that just don't seem to be performing as they should for tax purposes. That's not really grounds to declare blight. So, you can't simply say something's blighted just because you want more taxes. And that comes straight out of the Tennessee Code. So you may ask, well, how do you sort of establish that? And in essence, case law says that you look at things like code violations, vacancy rates, crime rates, lack of property tax increase can be a factor. And then obvious things like obvious dilapidation where a building's falling in, you know, that's sort of self-evident, I think. And even certain situations, maybe where there's environmental contamination or some other, because of the way the property's been designed or used in the past, that makes it inefficient or really not adequate for today's business environment. All those things can be considered blight. Okay, so that raises the next question. So can you have blight in a district if there are quote unquote good properties in the district? And the answer to that is yes. Tennessee courts have actually issued opinions on that, and that's in essence a summary of that you don't have to go structure by structure. It's really the area as a whole. So there could be, you know, top-notch buildings in a five-block area, but for the most part, the other improvements were poor, so it can be declared blighted. So how long can a TIF last? So under state law, housing authority TIFs can last up to 30 years. So that's a long time. And this is without a waiver. If you get a waiver from the state, you can go even further. An IDB TIF is 20 years without a waiver. And all the prior Kingsport TIFs, they've been 15 years. I believe that's correct. So who can initiate the TIF process? So there's only, well, there's really three entities: housing authorities, industrial development boards, and there's a third entity, convention center commissions, but we don't have one of those. I think maybe Knoxville has one, and there may be others, but so I won't talk about that. So housing authority TIFs, sort of the key things to remember: 30 years maximum term, you're limited solely to blighted areas, but they are more flexible regarding eligible costs, and that primarily relates to the ability to help subsidize land acquisition costs. You'll see here, industrial development board TIFs, they can't do that. 20-year maximum term, but the positive of the IDB TIF is it can be used in non-blighted areas, but it can only be used for industrial development board approved projects under the statute, which is basically mostly commercial, industrial, and retail. Okay. So I'll stop there. I know I'm going pretty fast here, but is there any questions about that part?
Four?
Okay, we'll go on. And we'll obviously take some questions at the end. So how is TIF implemented? So the first step is there's always public hearings on any redevelopment plans or TIF projects. So once that public hearing is held, then the city and the housing authority would approve the redevelopment plan, and the TIF proceed, you know, the tax increment financing procedures are in that plan. So as part of that, when you approve that initial plan, you establish the base assessment. That's just a way to say that's what the property tax assessment is today, now. Okay? So that establishes what the city and the county would continue to collect that amount at minimum. So that sets the floor of what the city and county can collect. So then you determine in the TIF plan the assessed value of what you expect the new project to result in. And what we normally do there is we go to the assessor office, show them the site plan, the blueprints, etc. They give us a written estimate as to what they would expect the new assessment to be once the improvements are built. So now you've got your base, and now you've got your new assessment, and the property taxes resulting from the new assessment above the base is called the increment. So once that increment is established, then the taxes are paid, just like all other property taxes are paid by the property owners, and then those get divvied up basically by the taxing agencies, and the base is kept by the city and county, and the increment, subject to some exceptions we'll talk about here in a second, is sent to the housing authority basically to amortize the debt that was borrowed by the housing authority and used to reimburse the developer for the eligible expenses. And then step five is once the debt is paid off, like happened in Eastone Commons, then the property taxes are paid like normal taxes and just kept by the city and county. Okay. So this is just a flow chart of sort of what the property taxes at the top look like. So on the left, number one, you've got the taxes on the base assessment. So those are kept by the city and county. So you never collect less than what you're collecting before the project started. And then number two is the increment, the new taxes, and that money is sent back to the housing authority, as I mentioned, to repay the debt. And then number three, There are exceptions in the statute that make a certain portion of the tax rate non-TIFable, if you will. So the city, I believe, designates approximately 33 cents of its $2.06 tax rate as debt service. So in addition to the base, the city would also get the increment on that 33-cent portion of the tax rate. So you're really only TIFing 206 minus 33, whatever that math is. And that debt service changes a little bit from year to year, and that's certified by Sid or whoever's holding that role at the time. And the county also has a number that they allocate. I think their number is 32 right now.
So the entire increase, except for that holdback, goes back to the developer, or to the housing authority to pay back to the developer.
Okay. Yes, statutorily, the minimum the city and counties can get is the base tax revenue and the debt service on the increment. But in some of our past projects, there's also can be, if it's negotiated with the developer, depending on what the developer needs for assistance and what they can, you know, sort of justify in order to make the project happen, there can be a holdback of the increment on top of the debt service and the base. So let's say that's 30% or 40% or 50%, whatever, you can just pick a number. So that 50% of the increment would then also come back to the city and county, whatever that negotiated term is. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing sort of situation that can be negotiated.
County's done that in the past.
Right. Yeah, the Indian Trail TIF has a 35% holdback for the city in it.
That's a good example.
So, sort of walk through the debt process. So, the authority negotiates a redevelopment agreement with the developer. The developer builds a project. Authority borrows funds. And this is very important. It's always a non-recourse loan. So if the housing authority doesn't get enough TIF money to make the payment, the lender can't sue the housing authority. It also, the city and county aren't involved at all. So they don't sign any guarantees. There's no pledge. There's no backstop. The only person backstopping the TIF loan is the developer. So if there's a shortfall, because the project got delayed, that's usually why, you know, if there is a shortfall, it's usually because of delay. But it could be because it didn't assess for what we thought it would, or the tax rates go down, or fill in the blank. It's on the developer. So the credit risk is between the lender and the developer, not the housing authority, the city, or the county. So once that loan closes, the builder builds what they're supposed to build, then the authority reimburses the developer for the eligible expenses with the loan proceeds. And eligible expenses, generally speaking, we're talking about mostly public infrastructure, roads, utilities, sewer, water, landscaping, sidewalks, that sort of stuff. With the housing authority TIF, we can use it for land acquisition costs, but you almost never need to because those costs are so high, it's more than the TIF will pay for to begin with. And then step six is the property owners pay the property taxes. That's another risk that could impact the TIF, is that if the owners don't pay, then there's no revenue to pay the loan, no increment. So that's that. Okay. So what I did was just real quickly, I put in a hypothetical. So let's just assume that there's a $100,000 current assessment. And this is important. It's assessed. I use assessment, not appraised value, because the assessment percentages are different between commercial and residential. So let's just assume we got a $100,000 assessment. So that would be, I guess $400,000 if on a residential, and whatever 40% of that is, I'm not good at math. And we're assuming that there's we increased the assessment by $1 million just for round numbers. So it went to 1.1. So you've got a 22 cent county debt service set aside, you've got 33 cents for the city, then you run the calculations. Usually in these TIF plans, there is an admin fee for the housing authority to pay for me and other costs, administration costs, overhead costs they have. That's carved out, and this is a no hold back, so it's only the debt service. So at the end of the day, down there in bold, that's going to generate about $38,800 of new money. Then you can see over here, or at the bottom, what the debt service would be, the new money to the city and county. Okay, now if there would be a hold back, then that would be, you know, over here on the right-hand column. So to give you some idea, that $38,000 over a 15-year period at a 3.5% interest rate, I ran the numbers just before we came in, would amortize about $450,000. So to give you some idea of the scale of what we're talking about here. And then that's with no... A lot of times the lenders require some cushion because they're worried about people not paying the taxes or the tax rates changing, so they usually they won't go to a 100% amortization rate. They're going to want, you know, maybe a 10 or 20% cushion, so it's probably more realistic, probably like $400,000. Okay, any questions?
And just to clarify something you said, I think at the beginning of your presentation, and it was a question that came up today when we were talking about this, should the overall tax assessment come in higher at various times than what was projected, those dollars go to pay the debt?
That's correct. The state law requires that any excess increment prepay the TIF loan.
So the developer can't put that in their pocket and hold it. It has to go to pay the debt.
That's correct.
And that is in turn how these have paid off sooner rather than later.
That's exactly right.
Okay,
that's right.
And whenever they're paid off, it goes normal tax. So if it pays off early, the city and county start immediately getting their regular tax.
That's correct.
I'm going to put county hat 1 second. I know at the county level, they felt like the tax assessors, that KHRA gets money for doing the service, but they thought the tax assessor, since they have to track a lot of this also, should get a portion of the money also. Is there something that if the county wanted to build that fee in, you're going to be asked that, so.
Well, I've heard that mentioned. I don't think that's in any of the existing TIFs that I'm aware of in Kingsport or Bristol, but the state statute allows up to a 5% admin fee, so you know, that would have, it couldn't go above that, so it'd have to be split between the housing authority, and I guess that'd be some negotiating there. It's possible, to answer your question, yes, it would be possible.
Well Joel, the holdback funds could be distributed any way the county wanted to.
Yeah, that's just regular tax revenue, just like any other money.
But that's specific, like we're using it for our debt service. I mean, the county is just...
No.
So you could have a holdback in addition to that service.
That's correct.
Holdback
yeah.
in addition, yeah.
yeah.
Then they could have, but I know that. That
I mean,
is,
that's a fair question. I understand that.
It will be asked when you present by the county.
But the 5% administration fee is what would have to pay the.
It just goes to KHRA.
I know, but he said if the
they
county
pay, they
money,
pay my fees out of it, and you know they have overhead too. In fairness to them, you only get the projects that get this far. There's quite a number of false starts where we meet with people and try and, you know,
okay.
tell them what's going on.
Tax
and then there's bills and expenses for that, but there's no money. So it's, you know, you'd have to ask them about the exact details. And, of course, they've got staff time and overhead and all that, too.
But there's a maximum of what that can be. You
said. It's 5% of the annual revenue. Okay. Yeah, so I can go back.
Next I saw this, it looked about like what I
it, it's about. Not a huge amount of money. Like in this example, it was less than, well, right at $2,000 combined, county and city. So so.
Okay, any other questions for Joel at this point?
Joel, let me just ask, I feel like I've heard you say multiple times that the burden and the risk falls on the developer. So, I guess just walk me through that a little bit. That's a true statement then, correct? So,
right.
It's a little bit different than a pilot.
Okay. Yeah, right. I was actually going to mention that, so, and I skipped over my notes, but, so what happens is a development agreement is signed between the builder and the housing authority, let's say, and it in essence says you're going to build X, and there's a site plan or blueprints or some specs of some sort, and a pretty decent level of detail. You know, if we have like an apartment building or something, usually we've got, you know, the blueprints, mm-hmm. so we know exactly what's going to be built. So they're required to do that, and the TIF money is usually drawn down sort of like a construction loan based on percentage of completion. So they don't get that money until, you know, 100% of the money until the project's done.
So there's no ability for somebody to put, this has come up in planning commission mm-hmm. from people that have asked, there's no ability for somebody to say, I'm going to build 100 homes here for this TIF. Then them go in and put 25 in and say I'm done, then they don't get the TIF, they don't get the money or anything.
Well, they would be in breach of the development agreement. Plus, even if we didn't have that, I mean, they would have signed the loan, so if they had gotten the money, the 25 houses isn't going to produce enough tax revenue to pay the TIF loan back, so they would be the ones actually paying the loan, or at least the shortage on the loan payment.
Okay.
So the risk of them not performing is really twofold. Usually in the development agreement, we say you don't get the TIF if you don't do it within a certain, you know, fairly reasonable period of time. But also, even if they do perform, and there's a shortage, it's on them. So the risk is really on them totally. So one thing I was going to mention, just pilots and TIFs, I know are confusing, but some people may say, well, what's the difference between a TIF and a pilot? And the big difference is, in a TIF, the property taxes get paid. They just get circled back through the authority to pay back the loan to reimburse the developer. But the benefit to the developer is they can get that TIF money up front for development cost, whereas a pilot is just they're not paying some portion of their taxes moving forward, but they don't have that money on the front end, so they've got to come up with the entire construction budget. So the TIF sometimes is more appealing depending on their cash position. Economically, you could argue it's a wash because it may not be a difference to the city or county whether they get the money and then send it back or just don't get the money, period. See what I'm saying? But to a developer, it could be a big deal to be able to have that extra 10% of their project cost covered by the TIF. That's the difference between making it profitable or not profitable. Any other questions?
But a lot of things that would qualify to be a pilot wouldn't qualify for a TIF.
Well, the key part about the Housing Authority TIF is it has to be in a blighted area.
Redevelopment zone.
So we couldn't just randomly give out TIFs. It has to be in the predetermined redevelopment.
It has to be a certain criteria.
Through the Housing Authority, that's absolutely true. Now, an IDB can do TIFs for projects that fall within their umbrella, but that's limited by statute, to, as I mentioned before. It does not have to be blighted, but it has to be commercial, industrial. They really don't have the authority to do residential under the Industrial Development Board TIF statute.
Joel, let me pause for just a second because make sure the board understands something. Chris, the current redevelopment zones in the city are this Stonegate, downtown, and Green Acres.
Green Acres, East End Commons,
Riverbend,
the riverfront.
Yep.
And then once you mentioned, that's it.
Yeah, I think that's all.
Okay, I just want to make sure everybody knew what they all were.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
It is confusing though if you're not on track with it.
Well, the districts are presumably, you know, the city and staff and all that, and the housing authority certainly know. So if a developer contacts, you know, them, they can walk them through what areas are eligible for, you know, a housing authority TIF.
That's what I'd hate to see. I'd hate to see one of our folks sell it and they're selling the wrong thing. But I guess you cleared up in no time because money hadn't transacted or anything, so.
Tommy, somebody could come to us for some project out of the redevelopment zone for a pilot, but they'd have to really make a good case, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
Jennifer has a question.
Okay.
My question was, so how frequently are the redevelopment districts looked at? Have they changed substantially over the last 10 years? If someone wanted to come to us and say, hey, I think this should be declared a redevelopment district, would that be possible?
That's definitely possible. I can't speak to how often. I guess, obviously, Riverbend was probably the most recent district. But to answer your question, I think it's something that probably should be examined every so often, just because I think it's good practice to identify the districts that you want to incentivize development in and that you believe are qualified as blighted. That way it makes the playing field level for everyone, you know, all developers, all property owners to come forward with a plan if they've got a good plan for that district.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Joel.
Do we want to go on? So I'm just going to mention NIT. So this is, I think you have a draft of the Stonegate proposal and TIF amendment. So this is the sort of the site plan. It's in the Stonegate district. That's obviously the old Walmart site primarily, and then the townhomes here, sort of in the lower right corner outlined in green. That would be the townhome site. I think that's a former car wash and maybe a couple of residential properties that the developers have control over. And I think that's just some representations of approximately what the townhomes and the single family homes would look like. So we did meet with the assessor and to talk about this project. They had some good comps. I'm missing a slide. Let's see if that's in your packet. Mm-hmm. I asked her to add that chart, and I think, unfortunately, I think she
busy.
Do you have the redevelopment TIF amendment in front of you, the plan?
They do.
Yeah. Turn to the very last page of that. That's the, and I'm going to walk over to my briefcase. I've got a hard copy. Yeah, thank you.
Exhibit 3,
yes. I thought that was in the slide, but I apologize. It got taken out by mistake. So the original base assessed value for this Stonegate Plaza Westgate project area, the current assessment is $561,320. So in essence, this is just the math. It's similar to the hypothetical we just walked through. Same exact concepts. The new assessed value based on the assessor's review of the site plan and the comps that they had based on the specifications the developer gave them, it was about $18.2 million. So at the 25% residential assessment, so it came to about 4.714. And then you can just basically walk through the math there. That would result in total county taxes of $121,000, and we'll focus on the city. Total city taxes of $97,000 down there, sort of about two-thirds of the way down. So the base is $11,000, so that gives an increment of about $85,000. Then you've got $13,000 of debt service. So that means the available increment is $72,000. So this proposal proposes a 35% holdback for the city, which amounts to $25,000 in new tax dollars. And so that would mean a total increment of $46,000 from the city that would go to the authority to repay the TIF indebtedness. $44,000. And that's a total of about $104,000 once you add the city and county increments together after deducting the debt service and the holdbacks. So that would amortize, somewhere between 1.1 to 1.2 million over a 15-year period. And that would mean new money for the city of $25,000, that's the holdback, plus the debt service of about $13,000, so that's almost $39,000 of new revenue from this site to the city as a result of this project.
And that's per year?
That's per year. And again, these are just estimates because the rates change and the assessment's not going to be exactly that, but roughly speaking, that's what we expect to happen.
So when you're looking, I mean, obviously, first year, it's not built out. It may not be built out to year 10, depending on whatever, because it delays. So the city would get the $11,000, that's the base rate, no matter what.
That's correct.
And then we would get a little bit, if two houses are built or 10 houses are built, a little bit more.
Well, it's a little bit complicated because probably the way that the TIF is structured is the 15-year period, we usually have like a two-year delay to start because of the bailout. So it can only be TIF for 15 years, but the TIF might not start for 2 to 3 years.
Okay, and the 3 years it's not starting, is the city getting...
Still getting the base.
Just the base. But what if like two houses are built?
Well, you would get that as well.
We get
because
the base.
The TIF hasn't started yet.
Okay.
We would get any improvements.
100%.
So we get 100% until it kicks in at whatever's at that point.
Yeah, but I wouldn't expect a lot.
I'm not, but I'm just in my head. Okay.
But you're right, there is a trailing effect there where it might be 10 houses or 20 until.
So is this a whole thing, like when you say the city would then need to give $46,000 of the taxes, obviously if the taxes coming in are only $30,000, we can't give $46,000 for a year one, two, six, or whatever.
Well, the total city taxes coming in are $97,000.
Well, that's a build out.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I'm saying, okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me explain it better. Okay. Year three, because we've waited, and let's say we have 10 houses, which we're going to have a whole lot more. I'm worst case, this is just,
okay.
So I'll understand. There's 10 houses built, and the total taxes on those are, for the city, is $22,000. And the city, it says $46,000 is what we're supposed to pay into this. So would we just pay the percentage, which would, when you after the holdback, so what we're putting in would be, $8,000, and the developer makes up the difference to pay it back?
That's correct.
We don't lose any.
Yeah, we don't lose, but we're not putting, we're getting our holdback plus the base, even if it doesn't meet the amount that we're looking at.
The way I would look at that is, what you should probably look at that is, break down each one of these 90 parcels into little mini TIFs.
Yeah.
So the city would get the base, it's $10,000, and then it would get its debt service on each one of those, at minimum, plus the 35% holdback.
Okay. But if there's a lot of delays because of whatever, and this project doesn't even get built out till, you know, 10 years from now, and you only have 5 more years to get the incentive back, obviously they're not going to get the whole thing. So the developer at that point would have to make the difference.
Well, the loan's going to be structured most likely like interest only for like 2 years, but then the principal is going to kick in. Because the redevelopment plan not only has, it has a maximum 15 years of TIF, but it also has a sunset. So it can't go beyond tax year 2038. So we're assuming that it starts in 2023, 15 years. And it, so if you only got started in 2025, you end up only getting 12 years of TIF. Whatever that is, math is to 2038.
And again, that's the developer that
has to make up the shortfall on the principal payment.
Makes it, I mean, that the developer is the one totally at risk on that, so the city is not.
Not at all.
So this really forces the developer to get things moving quickly.
To perform
and to get things built as quickly as possible, because if not, they're going to.
I mean, in this, it's very little risk to the city. I mean,
there's no risk to it.
I mean,
the only risk would be that Joel might disagree with the city manager, but if the developer went bankrupt and the project stopped altogether, it wouldn't be a cost to us, but it'd be a mess.
Well, yeah, but I mean, as far as just money-wise and costing us, you know, like the debt ratio of what was left. I mean, there's just very little risk for our citizens or for the city on this. I mean, that I see anyway.
Jennifer has a question.
Yeah, Jennifer, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I actually see it quite differently. I think there's actually significant risk to the city, and that we have done is we have given up the benefit of the tax revenue for 15 years. If this development would go forward without a TIF, basically, given up $1.2 million in tax revenue. So it's not about the risk of being on the hook for a loan that goes unpaid. It's about the fact that we have to make a decision as a city if this development would go forward regardless of the TIF. And if that's the case, that we think it would go forward without the TIF, then the risk is that we have given up the tax revenue. I feel really fine about the fact that it seems like the contract is written the way that the developer, you know, is accountable and has to hold themselves to paying back the bond, but that's the risk, right, that the project would go forward and that we had given a TIF that was not necessary.
But for 2 decades, that parcel I've set there, and I said it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. It's been it's an eyesore if you go back there, but you don't go back there unless you have a reason to go back there. And so for 2 decades, it sat there without any activity at all. So, and we've gotten the minimum property tax for 20 years. So, you know, I think that we're fortunate that someone is willing to take a risk, because it's the risk to the developer to, to put their money here to develop a place in Kingsport that we need homes, and that has been a blighted, bad area for 20 years since Walmart moved out.
Well, the underlying thing to any TIF, to me, I mean, is the economic impact of what it gives back. I mean, that's what you're after. And so in this case, I mean, to your point, we haven't had very much economic impact the last 18 years of that sitting there.
In fact, it's had a negative impact because it's...
And so, I mean, this, it not just affects that property, but this really affects the surrounding property there as well.
I think you'd look at it differently if Walmart had closed within the last couple of years, with the fact that it's set there for 18 years vacant with nobody willing to do anything is what makes this, for me, such a smart move.
Yeah.
Well, nobody's been willing to develop it for 18 years with a TIF. So you can guarantee nobody's going to develop it without it. Because this option has been on the table for 18 years to get TIF money because it's been blighted for that length of time. And no one has been willing to touch it, knowing they had that opportunity.
That's right.
Until Danny and this group, and let's just hope he doesn't change his mind before it gets started.
I applaud Jennifer raising the point, but I think that was a counter argument to her point that you just made.
Mayor, I have two other questions for Joel. Can I ask two other additional questions?
Sure.
First, I was just curious. So have we used a TIF for market rate single family housing in Kingsport, or would this be the first TIF for market rate single family housing?
It would be. I mean, we've done apartments, obviously, but not single family homes. So yes, I think the answer to your question is yes.
But it's been done in other areas. It started that way in Memphis, didn't it?
It's been done, you know, in several jurisdictions. That question came up, and I did a little, not in-depth research, but just some Googling, and found that it'd been done quite a bit in Memphis. Nashville has done it. Knoxville has done it quite a bit in the downtown areas for some of the townhomes, and then some of the high-rises that they've redone into, I guess, condos. That's not maybe not exactly the same thing, but it's close.
Yeah.
Then the second question I had was, is built for KHRA to negotiate the developer to shape this plan at all? And I will say that when I look at this particular plan, what strikes me is that there is very little green space in the plan. There's no public park set apart, as far as I can tell. So my question is, because they're relying upon the tax incentive, is there space to negotiate changes to the developer's plan or place requirements on it?
I think so. I mean, it's certainly, you know, been done in the past. Certain city desires, if you will, city goals have been built into the development agreement to require maybe sort of a step beyond what might normally be considered okay in some of the redevelopment agreements. Now, whether that's feasible or not, you know, I know that would be a question for the developer, but it is legally permissible, and we would include that in the specifications of the development agreement, whatever that might be. You know, I know that this project has a tremendous budget for landscaping and fencing, because, I guess, presumably because of the area it's in, but, you know, as far as the additional green space, every building lot you cut out, you know, that's revenue to the developer, so that'd be something that...
And to the city, too, because they wouldn't be getting a tax on a park than you would as you would on a house.
That's right, for sure. I mean, obviously, the park is an unimproved piece of land, you know, so you don't have the tax assessment of the...
And I can't say this with 100% certainty, but I want to say that there has been some conversations about a playground being put in by the developer. So I know it's not reflected on this plan, but I think there has been some discussions about that.
I do know, to add to that, the original thing was 77 lots, and in this agreement it says 76, so I'm going to assume they took out a lot for the playground.
Thank you.
Any other questions, board? Did you just reach the end of your brief there, Joel?
I have, yeah. Well, that's just sort of a breakdown of the current new revenue, total revenue, and then after the 15 years or whenever the TIF debt is paid, what the, you know, and those are in current dollars, so you would expect those to be higher, but that's just a breakdown on what we would project over time.
And you haven't had an opportunity to brief this to the county yet?
That's correct.
Do you know when that's scheduled?
It follows.
I believe it's set for a first reading this month,
yeah.
But that's sort of just, as you know, it's just sort of a formality. So I think the thought process would be to go to the December meeting for approval.
Approval, yeah.
We discussed it at workshop, and it was the to us and a couple of questions, and it seemed to go very favorably in the discussion.
All 24 commissioners heard this at a work session?
I think there were like 21.
Okay. Yeah,
but we didn't have this level of
detail.
We just had some basic information presented. We have the documents, but we got them then, so no one had read them at that time. So I'm sure everybody will read and study those prior to our actual meeting.
and the county was not going to lose any money.
But it was very favorably received when they looked at how long this area had been blighted and the benefits of doing this. And everyone's aware of how many people are trying to move into this region. And the more people we can get in Sullivan County, the better. So it really went very, I thought it was beneficial.
Well, you know, I'm past 12 years as an elected official in one capacity or another, and I probably voted against more incentive-type deals than I voted for. So Jennifer raises a valid question. In a perfect world, you wouldn't need this because the free market would just take care of it. But in reality, we've gone 18 years with a blighted area and with no interest by anybody until now to actually do something. And as Jeff Fleming pointed out, we have a critical need for housing. And so there's no way that the taxpayers lose any money on this, and they stand the gain in a variety of ways by doing this. But that's all I want to offer. Are there any more comments for Joel or me or anybody else?
Well, I appreciate TIF 101.
We'll take it home with you if you have trouble sleeping tonight. Just pull it out.
I mean, seriously, I've
been involved in a lot of TIF projects, but this was an unusual one.
Thank you.
Thanks,
okay.
Joel.
Thank you all.
Well,
thank you, Joel.
Two good presentations this evening.
All right, Mayor, we want to move on to our review the business agenda for tomorrow night.
Okay.
First item is to reappoint Calvin Clifton and Jeff Little to the Board of Zoning Appeals. This will be for their second term.
I would like to make one comment about that. This board has issues that come before it that need somebody that's smarter than the average bear with a little experience to deal with it, and I think it's appropriate to reappoint these guys till the newer guys have a chance to really absorb what all's entailed in these issues. So that's why I put these four.
I feel very comfortable with that. I think that's a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank
y'all. I really like the way you do your voice that way, too. It's good.
Yeah.
And some special effects we're trying to work into it. Yeah. It's savvy.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, next item is for the second reading for your JAG grant for the bulletproof vest. You also have then second reading for a budget adjustment ordinance. A couple of these items we'll talk about as we move through the agenda. Next item is awarding the bid for the purchase of 9 all-wheel drive marked police pursuit package SUV. As I mentioned earlier, these are for Dodge Durangos. We're beginning to move away from the cruiser to the SUV, and the Durango was the low bid.
By the way, if y'all priced any new cars lately, this is a really good price.
Yeah, it is. Auto World, Big Stone Gap, did a good job on that price. Next item is awarding the bid for the purchase of a 125 passenger cutaway minibus. This is actually a replacement for our senior center. So hopefully by the time we get this bus, they'll be able to get out and travel some, hopefully.
Tommy, do you have a license to drive this vehicle?
Oh, yes. I'm
definitely.
He does not.
Okay, go ahead. Next item is, this is actually one we had on the work session last time we pulled this, but this is a release of claims. This involves an accident involving one of our fire trucks. We pulled this to just kind of do a little bit further evaluation of the payment that was coming to the city because it was a little bit less than what the actual damages were. After we reviewed it with risk management, legal department, the recommendation was to proceed with the settlement amount that we have here. Any questions? Next item is to buy Ryan a new garbage truck. This is a replacement to the fleet, so we'll be getting that in here soon. The next two items, Ryan actually went over in quite a bit of detail with you all at our work session, so we'll kind of move through that. Nikki is here if you'd like to get the correct information versus what you heard from Ryan. She's happy to do so. But again, the first item is for amending our agreement with CDM Smith for our water treatment plant. And for this will cover the high service pump station as well as the clear well improvement. This is a fairly substantial contract, and this is in a year, as you recall, we did not really do any borrowing for capital other than what we did with the schools. This is actually coming from previous years, and so this is part of that capital plan we presented to you back in May to move this forward. The same is true for the next item, which is for a contract with Bars Design for the Reedy Creek Trunk Sewer Improvements Phase 2. One thing that I will mention about both of these projects are projects that came out of a master plan that was developed by the staff, and they've slowly been working that plan, and that's been very, very helpful for us as we've gone through the budgetary process.
Let me pause for a second. Do y'all have any questions for Nikki or for Ryan? Okay, go ahead.
The next item is to amend our agreement with Cartograph. And as I talked to you earlier, we are moving away from the MyGov app or YourGov. Ryan, YourGov?
It's YourGov.
YourGov. People want to say MyGov. YourGov app to C-Click-Fix. We actually were going to have a presentation and recognition tomorrow night, but we had to move that back into December. Nonetheless, we're still moving forward with this contract. C-Click-Fix will become the new app that we will direct our citizens to regarding whether it may be a sign that's down or maybe an issue with a pothole or whatever city service that they want attention to, they'll be able to use this. But the neat thing about this, we're actually asking you all to pay $14,000 more so that we can have a city app branded for us that then becomes a portal into various other activities such as access to Bays Mountain, Aquatic Center, Parks and Rec, city government in general. So we really felt like this was a good opportunity to take advantage of this. So you'll be able to go on to the App Store if you have an iPhone or the Microsoft or Android Store. If you have another device, be able to search for this, download this app, and hopefully become kind of a one-stop shop for the business that you do in the city.
Do you know what the time frame of that will be? I mean, if this is approved, then when do we get the app?
We're put together a marketing for the December January time frame. It's kind of new year, new connection, and we're trying to align it because this is going to be the portal into all the different activities within the city. We started mainly with Cartograph, which is our work, but also code enforcement. So we're going to try and launch it the December January launch and kind of couch it as a new year, new connection, new app. That way, you just have to download one app for Kingsport. It will take you to all the other activities. So I think that's where Adrian's and Sheila and Kristen's time
is. I mean, it's pretty quick, so that's not like the waiting.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. Next item is accept our deeds and deeds of easements for various projects that we have been involved in throughout this year, fiscal year 19 and 20. You'll see that list within there, within the action form. The next item has to do with the subordinating of a sewer tap fee to allow a homeowner to do a refinancing of their house. This is relatively new. Sewer tap fee and payment plan that's been set up. They are current, and this is really just a housekeeping matter to allow that to move forward.
Mike, does this becomes an agreement that I signed for the city between us and the homeowner?
Between you and the financing company.
Financing company.
The bank.
Okay. Thank you.
Next item has to do with approving a supplement to a real estate purchase and a sale contract for Cayenne Rental Properties. This is for the space that we recently purchased for DB Excel, as well as some additional space for expansion of that program. This is simply putting in place an opportunity for them to, if they should desire and if they were to get approval from the IRS, to be able to take a portion of that, which they sold us this property below appraised value. The difference between the certified appraised value they would submit to the IRS would be eligible for a tax credit. And so this is just a housekeeping matter that we are required, since we are the entity that received the property. And then George has been patiently waiting here, and so I'll let him kind of update you all on the stop loss insurance. You're muted.
Okay. Kind of good news, bad news. Then the stop loss, for one thing, we have to really wait to the end of the year, about every year, to get quotes on it, because the vendors are wanting to look at our claims data. But stop loss is insurance for really for high level claims that. So when you see the one we have here, we have a specific deductible of $150,000. What that means is if we have an individual, say, that has $200,000, we pay $200,000 in claims on $150,000 less under $200,000 leaves you $50,000, which goes into the aggregate. Okay, once the aggregate hits $175,000, and anything over on that, we're reimbursed. We've had two bids on this, one of which put four lasers on four of our claimants. Now, what a laser is a specific aggregate. So, for example, where everybody else is $150,000, they put a laser on one of our employees of, let's see, it's $575,000. Which means they won't pay anything. They won't pay the normal $150,000. They've got to exceed $575,000. They have four lasers applied, and that's where that 2.125 is there. That's an increase in liabilities because the total lasers went up by $2 million. The vendor with the lasers is actually less, about $70,000 less in our premiums than the vendor was recommending. However, the vendor was recommending doesn't put any lasers on any of our employees. We've actually looked at who the claimants are, you know, and what we expect and what kind of claims we expect in the future. So with all that being said, we recommend that we go with lawyer. And I'll be glad to answer any questions, or probably generate more questions by explaining what I'm doing than I had before. But
You were muted the whole time. We never heard a word you said, George.
Lasers like a red flag.
Right. You've got historical high claims with an individual that's on your plan, and they're saying that they're not going to pay until that individual gets
right.
this
if
amount.
We took if we had those lasers in place today, we would have gotten no refunds. In reality, we've gotten over $200,000 in refunds from our stop loss. So it did go up. Our claims went up as well. So it's kind of a business madness because really, we're kind of glad when you don't get a lot of money back. It doesn't mean you don't have a lot of high claims and your employees are pretty healthy, which is really what you like to see. But you got to have it.
When did I start getting all my medicine and everything and getting a full-time employee?
We still haven't worked out that date yet, Tommy.
They put a laser on you.
It wasn't a question.
Okay, right. Hey, George?
Yes, sir.
I've been studying your charts, but is a 70,000 increase, is that kind of normal in today's market?
Well, according to our vendor, that's about a 15% increase. And again, that varies depending on really the shape of your claims. They look at all the individual claims, and so they're looking at it and doing their models to see what they expect, what the employees have, what their condition is, what the cost of their treatment is. And
is there something about our claims in recent years that stands out?
No, as a matter of fact, if you look at the total cost, it's really just a handful of employees. One person, one or two people can really drive it up. But you never know. You just don't know. We could have a good year next year. As a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, our stop loss insurance actually went down a little bit. So it's just something that they look at.
That's what we found out in the county. Was like three or four people, boom, could just run the whole thing up there.
You could. And it really does. I don't want to get into a lot of specifics, but there's a very small percentage of claimants that make up a big percentage of your claimants.
Okay, thank you. Any of y'all got questions for George or City Manager?
And this is not, the schools are not part of this anymore. This is just us, correct?
Correct.
I could hear that.
This is just city employees. It doesn't involve the schools.
Okay. Thank you, George.
Thank you.
It's involved with others.
For some, yeah. Okay, that's it. The last item is simply just going to be spread over the minutes. This is the report of the debt obligation for the capital outlay note that we received for the DBXL property. And you're like me, phone's been blowing up, DB has advanced to the third round for the post-AA. So.
Well, they are going.
Yep.
Wow.
And
Merrill. Okay, let me go around the room. Bessie, anything else?
Well, I've debated as it later today bringing up something about the elections. I know that Jason Boer came pre-COVID and talked to our board about moving our dates to either November or August. And since he came, the numbers have changed, the cost has changed. It's gone to about $10,000. Plus the renting of Civic Auditorium. Plus, as I was waiting in line to vote, he was talking to me, and he said that one of their big issues this time was getting poll workers to come just because of COVID. He said, because it's usually retired people that come. And since he came, also Bristol and Blount have both decided to change. And I'm not sure, are they doing November or August?
August or November, right
there. Okay, but now,
Bristol's going to go to November. I don't know about Bluff City.
But anyway, so he said since some of the figures that he gave us changed, and some of the because of COVID, that would we be willing to discuss it again or leave it like we voted? And we voted several months ago. I didn't have a strong feeling either way. But I don't know if it was something that we wanted to look at again or just
table and say
we've already...
Mike says we're not supposed to vote at these things, but let's put it this way. I'll say that Betsy brought it up for discussion. Is there anybody else that wants to second that?
The discussion? Second it. You can talk about it, but you can't second it.
Okay. Anybody want
to? I'll second it.
Are you going to talk about it today?
I'll second it.
I know some feedback from the people that ran in Johnson City felt like the climate around this presidential election, no one paid any attention to who was running for the city. They never were at, no one cared what their opinions are or what they were doing because there was too much focus on presidential. So if you went to November, the people I talked to in Johnson City said they regret that they made the decision to go to November, that anybody involved in it, no one in the city knew who they were. They were just being voted on either by name recognition or because they were alphabetical. And they said that there was no...
Well, I agree. I said,
Yeah, no time for anybody to learn about someone's viewpoints or who somebody was, and obviously they weren't talking to them at the polls because it was just, you know, and I think, I foresee that all presidential elections are going to overrule any local when you get that many people, it's that volatile, so I would truly hope we never looked at going to a November to compete with that, because I don't think, you know, the people I've talked to really liked that we were unique in May and it focused on who we were that, as this board and who was running. But if we have to move it, I would strongly say put it in August and don't go to November just because of all the feedback. But everybody that talked to me was like, I'd rather pay and have it be the people that care about the city vote. So.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I haven't heard a ton of people say that we should move it, and I'm very concerned with the nice thing about a local election is that it's not left or right. It's just a local election. And I'm just as heated as this political climate was this year, I'm just scared to death to go in that direction because you just get that muddies the water, and then I agree with you I cannot disagree with November more. If I said that right, because it just, nobody's going to wait 2 hours in line.
You got to turn before you run again.
I don't care about that. I may not even run, but it's the fact that you got to wait 2 hours to vote for a city election. I mean, people just aren't going to do it. They're not going to care.
I'm just looking at the cost of it.
It was approximately $39,000 to do it ourselves, right?
Yeah, plus the rental of Civic Auditorium, if we have to pay for
it. It doesn't seem to bother anybody else, so I don't care.
But it's not every year, it's an every other year thing. I don't know, I just, based on what people told me, and I don't want, I think you're going to get into a red and blue world, and everyone out there we're going to be campaigning, and they're going to ask us our politics and how we feel on national issues that don't come before us. And I don't want to be out there campaigning on my abortion stance to run for city council. I mean, I think you're going to get where we would have to defend national topics that are not what's good for Kingsport, Tennessee. So that's just my opinion.
Well, you get some of that now.
Yeah.
Well,
you do.
But it's going to be, it'd be a whole different thing if you were doing it, if think what November would have been.
Oh, November.
Yeah, I think November is off the table.
Jennifer,
May or August.
Let's speak to Jennifer. You want to say anything?
I mean, I think I feel very much like Colette does. I thought we had reached a decision about this next go-round, and I feel like we should stick with what we decided, and then if the board wants to revisit this question, that's fine. But I think it's getting a little close to be making this decision now.
Daryl, did you want to say anything?
No, I mean, I don't think my decision would change if we voted on it again. I think I'd probably vote the same way. I don't know if I said that or not.
We had 3 viewpoints and 4 other viewpoints. The 3 lost, obviously, and that was the change. And Betsy, unless you wanted to change, then flip it the other way, 4-3, I'm ready to table this.
Let me ask this a parliamentary question first. Mike, as I recall, this was brought to the board, and as the mayor stated, it failed 4-3.
Right.
In order for that to come back on the agenda, can you explain what the process would be?
Well, I sort of can explain it. It would require a motion for reconsideration. It would have to be by somebody who was on the prevailing side. The prevailing side would be the 4 people who voted to keep the elections where they are. It'd have to be seconded, and then, of course, that was voted. Technically, you're supposed to make the reconsideration motion at the meeting where you voted on it, but obviously that didn't happen, so... The only way I know you could do it is to have somebody at a board meeting make that motion, and it would have to be, I don't remember who voted for it and who didn't vote against, but y'all know, it would be one of the 4 who voted for it would have to move the vote to reconsider the decision that the board made. Otherwise, you could just bring this up, you know, in out of the item.
Okay. What's different from when we decided before is simply that Bluff City made a decision to go to the even year, and Jason Boer gave us a better, closer number of what the cost would be. Other than that, the whole concept has remained
COVID
the same.
Happened. Yeah, I mean, not that.
But it eventually will end. Get a vaccine, hopefully before the, it may not be before this election, but before the next election, we will have, it will, we will have, I mean, the vaccine, the first group of vaccine will be out before the end of the year. So.
By the way, the number of early voting days is mandated by the state.
Yeah.
So we don't have a choice there.
Except I don't think you got to drag him in tents and stuff out there anymore.
Then I'm gonna go with Mike here. I'm gonna say if somebody wants to reconsider this, we'll have to do it formally at our business meeting. Otherwise, anything, any other? Thank you for bringing it up. I'm glad we had this session. Any other?
So one of the four that voted to keep it.
That was you. That would be you.
So we could bring it up.
We'd have to bring it up and it'd be seconded, and then we'd vote again.
Vote yet.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Have a debate and all that stuff, just like it was a motion on the floor.
Okay.
It'd be helpful if we knew ahead of time. I mean, I'm not trying to submarine anybody, but if you could put it on the...
Well, she's only talking to me right now.
If you could put it on the agenda, then... No, but if you could put it on the agenda, that that's what you intended to do. It would be helpful. Probably.
That would be helpful, but it's not absolutely required.
Right.
Okay. Anything else, Daryl?
No problem.
James?
I'm hungry.
Okay. Tommy?
I'm full.
Okay. Jennifer, anything else?
Hungry.
Hungry. You're at home. You've been eating now.
I'm good.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.
We're going to have another hour of presentation.